Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Welcome to Wednesday. And on a big Wednesday, we heard something today that I don't think any of us expected to hear, and apparently the justice himself did not expect to hear this. Stephen Breyer is retiring from the Supreme Court, or is he? Now, that was the story that started moving late this morning, about 11:30, 11:45. The buzz started, the Fox News alert chime, all the different channels went breathless. Stephen Breyer's retiring. He's leaving the Supreme Court at the end of the term. There's going to be a fight, a battle royale to replace him. We don't know what could happen, who's going to get appointed. We do know that Joe Biden, President Biden, has said he's only going to appoint a woman of color, an African-American woman. Who's it going to be? What's going to happen? How's it going to go? And then we found something out. Apparently, Justice Breyer had a conversation with somebody, but he's fit to be tied today because he wasn't going to announce his retirement today. And think about this administration, because they can't do anything cleanly. They can't do anything professionally, cleanly, appropriately, with any measure of dignity at all. They are abjectly incompetent when it comes to even the most basic manners. The Supreme Court justice announces they are retiring. Everybody shuts up at the White House until that's official. But no, not with this crew. No. This crew, everything's got to be scratch and dent and 99-cent store cheap. Have you noticed that? I have. I'm not surprised. We ought to start referring to him as Dollar Store Joe. Dollar Store Joe Biden. Except for one thing. There are no more dollar stores. You can thank inflation and Joe Biden for that. Now let's analyze what's in front of us as a result of this premature announcement. Awfully fitting for a president well into his years. Breyer retires is really not a big deal, but for the fact that Biden will put a younger, true leftist in his place. That's what he will do. In the position currently being occupied by Stephen Breyer, they will appoint a true leftist, a real hardcore leftist, in his place, who will be younger. Now, the first question that comes up, and I heard it in Jen Psaki's press conference, I call it her press conference, because she's really sort of like the vice president of the United States. She kind of tells the world what's really going on. You don't really hear from Vice President Harris very much. We're just going to, for the purposes of this program, we're not going to refer to it as the White House briefing. I know that's what the newsrooms will do. It's the White House briefing. I get it. But it's always, always the Jen Psaki press conference. So the question two of the Jen Psaki press conference today, from a reporter, I think it was at Messy NBC. It's the low-budget, low-end version of NBC News. MSNBC, where Pompadour Boy in the morning stands there 7 feet tall next to Mika, who looks so terrified that she's got to go home with him. The question was, would the president entertain appointing Vice President Harris to the position? Could that be the case? And of course, right then, Psaki goes, we're not talking about this until there's an official announcement from Stephen Breyer. We don't know how this got out. I do. It's probably Ron Klain dropping it to try to change the narrative from the failed press conference last week by the president. And of course, the insanity as we stumble towards war in Ukraine. Oh, no, we're not going to comment about that right now. We won't talk about that. We want to give the dignity that was stolen from him, by the way, back to Stephen Breyer so he can make the announcement. Ooh, how about Hillary Clinton? Can we put her on the Supreme Court? Ooh, how about Stacey Abrams? Can we put her on the Supreme Court? Who can we put on the Supreme Court? Let's do it. No, we're not talking about that. We're not talking about that until the Supreme Court justice announces or doesn't announce a retirement. We're not talking about that. I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, the most perfect thing that could happen right now is Stephen Breyer issues a statement saying, I had talked about retiring, but I've decided to remain on the bench. Thank you very much for all the inquiries. Have a wonderful rest of your season. Look, this is about trying to save the Democrat base. That's why they leaked this out. They needed to pull the panic button or push the panic button because they know what they're up against. A complete wipeout. And oh, by the way, the Speaker of the House, a.k.a. Gollum, Precious, I'm going to run again to be the congresswoman from San Francisco. Nancy Pelosi announced that overnight. I'm sure Joe Biden is just absolutely doing backflips and thrilled about that reality. Breyer wants to get out of the loony bin. That much is close. That much is clear. Washington, D.C., they put billboards up around Washington, D.C., basically saying, hey, Breyer, quit. Hey, Breyer, retire. Breyer needs to retire. You're too old. We got to be able to get a real Marxist on the bench ASAP. They got signs up like within vision line of his home with those kinds of signs. If I'm Breyer, I'm like, dude, you're going to get me out when DeFi leaves, and she's 970 years old. When Nancy Pelosi leaves, I've changed my mind. I'm going to stick around. I'm going to stay on the bench. But he probably won't because he seems like a decent enough guy. He's a progressive, but he's a decent guy with a lot of charm, and he's a nice guy. Either way, what you're watching right now is a distraction from a ton of other things like mandates and COVID and the border and the Ukraine war and all of that stuff. And don't forget the protracted assault on your personal civil liberties. Speaking of which, the city of San Jose, California, passed a measure last night that is going to compel anybody who owns a gun to purchase insurance so that if anybody gets shot anywhere in San Jose, they can shake down the gun owners for a payout. I've got a special guest coming by next, Bill Frady from Lock and Load TV. Wow, what a name for an operation there. Bill Frady from Lock and Load TV. He's going to join us. Coming up next, we'll talk about this and taking your phone calls on this SCOTUS Battle Royale. News Talk, 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It's the Brett Winterbull Show. So San Jose, California City Council voted last night to adopt a first-in-the-nation ordinance requiring most gun owners to pay a fee and carry liability insurance, measures aimed at reducing the risk of gun harm by incentivizing safe behavior and easing taxpayers of financial burdens of gun violence. This is the mayor of San Jose, Sam Liccardo.
This ordinance has two elements. First, we require every gun owner in the city to have insurance, just as every driver has to have insurance to use a car. And second, we would be funding violence prevention initiatives with a fee that would be levied on gun owners so that we could invest in reducing domestic violence and suicide and provide mental health services and other kinds of services, particularly to households in which a gun is owned.
My next guest, Bill Frady, is the proprietor and host over at Lock and Load TV. He joins us now on the line. Bill, thanks for making time for us. I know you got a show coming up here at 4 o'clock, but let me ask you this question. We're letting all the criminals out of jail, especially gun crimes. Those folks are free to walk around with their guns. We've got law-abiding gun owners living in San Jose. They didn't buy their guns out of the back of a van. This, to me, feels like yet another impediment, another attack on the Second Amendment.
Oh, it absolutely is. And the reason they're going to be able to get away with it in the beginning is because California has a gun registry. So they know it's not going to be some gun owners. It's going to be every gun owner in San Jose. And they're going to have to pay liability insurance, which I don't know exactly who sells those kind of things, that kind of a rider on a homeowner's insurance or just outright gun liability insurance. There may be somebody out there, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the tax, which, you know, and they're talking about, well, you have to have insurance to operate a car, so you got to have insurance to operate a gun, which is not the way that works. And
right.
Makes me wonder if they're going to tax maybe could we tax politicians on opening their mouth with the First Amendment, since they think the Second Amendment is taxable?
Right. One would think, right? You have to get a protesting permit, and you have to pay for right. that and buy insurance so that there's no looting or rioting either, Bill. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
This is insane. This is insane. I'm hoping there are going to be dozens and dozens of lawsuits filed immediately to try to enjoin
the Second Amendment Foundation. If they don't already have one teed up, they're going to turn on a dime on this one. This will be one that it's not going to stand. It's not going to stand. And in Chicago, when they decided that when they were forced to give out permits, they tried to stack that deck, saying you had to have this much training, you had to go this way, you had to do this in this locale. And the problem is, in Chicago proper, in the city, there are no gun shops. There are no training facilities. So one of the judges, and I don't remember which district, came out and said, well, listen, if you're going to require them to do this, then you're going to have to make it available to them or just give them the permit.
We just watched a record number of guns purchased in the last 2 years. I mean, off the charts, right? Because people didn't feel safe.
Yeah.
And we were defunding the police. And all sorts of things were going to happen.
Right.
Do they just look at this and think that people are going to just play the game? Because the reality is, we don't have to ask permission to defend ourselves.
Well, I don't know about San Jose. I know California's got plenty of Soros-funded DAs that look the other way on crime. It's okay to, you know, they started out with, you and I could go make a living just going into Walgreens and stealing $949.99 worth of stuff, and we're good to go.
That's right.
And they're not. You know, in Beverly Hills, they're arming up. They're putting out defensive grids in Beverly Hills. The old money of Beverly Hills is doing that kind of stuff. And that's because there's no cops. They're soft on crime. They like crime. This is, I think of it this way, Brent. This is Cloward and Piven on the violent side. They're trying to drive everybody to government by creating a violent society to live in. And they want everybody to run the government and say, hey, protect us, would you?
Right. It's a great point, because there are no, we're not seeing crackdowns on gangs. We're not seeing crackdowns on cartels. We're not seeing crackdowns on people that are selling illegal firearms. And by the way, here's what's interesting about this. Bill Frady joining us here from Lock and Load TV. Here's the thing that I think is interesting. Under San Jose's measure, gun owners would be charged an annual $25 fee directed to a nonprofit set up to distribute funds to crime prevention and victims of gun violence. The measure also would require gun owners to obtain that liability insurance we were just talking about, right? If you don't comply, you will be subject to fines and your guns will be impounded, subject to a due process hearing.
Right.
Okay. This is nuts. Yes, but you can have lower premiums if you have a gun safe, trigger locks, and complete a gun safety class.
You know, the whole thing about gun control, like the background check, as an example, the background check is a Polaroid snapshot of what you have been up to this moment. It does nothing.
Right.
Background checks have never stopped crime. Safe storage, the only way to ensure safe storage happens if you mandate it is to violate the Fourth Amendment,
right.
Which means you're making incursions into somebody's house to make sure they got a gun safe. All of these things have nothing to do with the crime that's going on now. This is all based upon all of the crime spikes right now.
Right, that's true.
Are in blue cities with blue governments. It's a policy result. It has nothing to do with law-abiding gun owners. It has everything to do with policies put in place by Democratic politicians.
One guarantee I can make, Bill, more guns are going to get stolen.
They're going to get what?
They're going to get stolen. More guns are going to be stolen. That's what's going to
happen. California is the capital of all kinds of things.
It sure is. Bill Frady, thank you so much for making time for us today. I appreciate your insights, my friend, and good luck and all the best.
My pleasure. Thank you, sir.
You got to take care. That's Bill Frady. I'm Brent Winterbull, News Talk 1110 993 WBT. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. It is the Brent Winterbull Show. Phone line's open for you to check in, 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. How much are you watching what's going on in Ukraine versus what's going on in the classroom? Well, the teachers' unions are now forcing a new web extension on teachers and students to get kids essentially reprogrammed. And you want to know who's responsible for this? You're going to love it. You know the name, Randy Weingarten. the American Federation of Teachers boss. Now, don't go running into your kid's classroom and yelling at the teachers about this. This is way different than a teacher who's working on the front lines trying to educate your kids. This is about an ideological takeover of what it is your kids consume in terms of media and information, how they process it, and how they define it. Tens of millions of American school children will soon rely on a liberal media watchdog group to determine what counts as, quote, misinformation. The American Federation of Teachers this week struck a deal to license NewsGuard. It's a web browser extension to its 1.7 million union members. Students across the country will soon rely on NewsGuard's tools to determine the reliability of hundreds of websites. So we're going to contract with this company called NewsGuard. I mean, nobody would want to have their kid get incorrect or bad news. So we've got NewsGuard to help them understand that this is legitimate news. So these are the tools to determine the reliability of hundreds of websites. American Federation of Teachers president, and remember, the big kahuna who determined whether or not schools would reopen, the CDC went and sucked up to her. They said, oh, Randy, can we open the schools? And she goes, only under these 17 conditions will I permit President Biden to reopen the schools. I mean, that's essentially what she did. She got 1.7 million. That's an army. That is an army. Putin's only got a couple hundred thousand troops in Ukraine. Randy Weingarten's got 1.7 million troops to deploy against institutions and individuals in this country. Just remember that. American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten said her union will use NewsGuard to help students separate fact from fiction and develop their critical thinking and analytical skills. But while NewsGuard claims to be nonpartisan, one analysis of its rating system found it skews heavily in favor of liberal outlets. I'm shocked. I'm stunned. Why is it that the media monitoring services all bend left? It's like they're part of the Peyronie's disease constabulary of news and information. It bends left. It's got to go left. But while NewsGuard claims to be nonpartisan, one analysis of its rating system found it skews heavily in favor of liberal outlets. The Media Research Center found NewsGuard rates liberal sites 27 points higher in terms of trustworthiness than conservative outlets. 9 out of 10 of the websites on NewsGuard's misinformation list are conservative or pro-life websites. NPR, which came under fire last week for lying about Judge Gorsuch on the Supreme Court, Justice Gorsuch on the Supreme Court, is listed as one of its most trustworthy sites, along with other establishment media outlets. Why do people look at NPR as some kind of a gold standard, when in reality, NPR is not a gold standard? You are subsidizing them to give you tote bags and Puff the Magic Dragon CDs. That's all you get from NPR. You literally are getting state radio, state news, like from a state and also from the federal government. That's what you get from NPR. I mean, let's be honest here. And when they can't find some dirt on a conservative, they make it up like they did last week and they were caught. I'm Nina Totenberg, and I still stand by my reporting. My reporting indicated that Judge Gorsuch made a snooty kind of sniffle towards Sotomayor, and I believe that means he doesn't want to wear a mask. None of the conservatives want to save lives, though they claim to be pro-life. I'm Nina Totenberg for NPR. Please give well so we can send you a tote bag and some hemp and a Judy Collins album. No way, Jose. Come on. So they're the most trustworthy outlet, right? Okay. The deal comes amid an intense debate over the spread of left-wing curricula in America's schools, as well as school lockdowns during the coronavirus pandemic. Parent groups have protested against the infiltration of progressive ideology, such as critical race theory in the classroom. They have also blamed the American Federation of Teachers for supporting school closures during the pandemic. Well, that was true. Randy Weingarten was flying all over the country, meeting with teachers groups going, we're not going to reopen. No, we're not going to reopen at all. No way. They had video of her sitting in a luncheonette in Taos, New Mexico, surrounded by denim-clad cowboy wannabes. I think they may have even had the Bellamy Brothers playing a musical number for them. You'd have to know what that means. The Bellamy Brothers has got a connection in New Mexico. And, you know, okay. Anyways, NewsGuard insists it's politically neutral, noting it has given negative ratings to liberal news outlets as well. Our rating process is designed to be apolitical and to mitigate bias of any individual reporter or editor in our team from affecting the site's review. NewsGuard's executives have bungled evaluations of major news stories in recent years. Steve Brill, the original founder of Court TV, Steve Brill, NewsGuard's founder, asserted in 2020 that the New York Post story about Hunter Biden's laptop was false and based on Russian disinformation. Way to go, Stevie Brill. Way to go. My personal opinion is there's a high likelihood this story is a hoax, and maybe even a hoax perpetrated by the Russians again, said Brill in an interview with NBC. Oh, there you go. That's the left talking to the lefter. Emails from Biden's laptop have since been validated, so we know it's all a lie. But they're going to put these things on your kid's computer so that there's absolutely no chance that they'll discover a competing series of questions, ideas, analyses, conclusions, what have you. It'll be the Randy Weingarten AFT monitoring system. You're welcome, America. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110-993-WBT. News Talk 1110-993-WBT, Brett Winterbull Show. Oh, this is not how you're supposed to behave on a flight at all. Port Authority police officers at JFK International Airport took an unruly passenger off a Delta Airlines transatlantic flight from Ireland. They had to take him off the plane. What would you guess the guy's issue was on the plane, given where we're living in this day and age? What would you guess he didn't want to do? Didn't want to wear a mask. An Irishman was busted, this is the way the New York Post puts it, an Irishman was busted for refusing to wear a mask on a New York-bound Delta flight and mooning flight attendants and fellow passengers, according to the feds. Shane McInerney, 29, faces up to 20 years behind bars on charges of interfering with a flight crew's duties and intentionally assaulting and intimidating a member of a flight crew during a Delta Airlines flight from Dublin to JFK Airport on January the 7th. McInerney allegedly refused dozens of requests from the flight crew to mask up, and he pulled down his pants and underwear, mooning passengers and flight staff. According to the criminal complaint, he raised his fists to the captain after placing his own hat on the pilot's head, declaring, "Don't touch me." He's from Galway, Ireland, and was a menace for all 8 hours of the transatlantic journey. He allegedly hurled an empty beverage can that struck a passenger in the head and stormed into the first class cabin to complain about the food he was given in economy, exposed himself to multiple passengers, kicked the seat of the person in front of him, and refused to sit down during the plane's final descent to JFK. The complaint said at least one passenger found the Irishman scary and that the crew considered diverting the plane to a nearby airport to kick him off. McInerney flew to New York en route to Florida to begin a job at a soccer academy in the state, according to the reporting. He was admitted to Jamaica Hospital for medical and psychological evaluation after the flight landed. Don't go trying to play the insanity card here. You can't go and try that now. But was in true New York tradition now, but was released on $20,000 bail pending his trial and was required to seek mental health care at his arraignment on January 14th. in Brooklyn federal court. Okay, a couple of problems. How many, what's your average transatlantic flight got on the flight? 300 people, 250 people. So you're 250 versus one. I mean, in all seriousness, setting aside the women and the children and the elderly, I'm guessing they're coming from Ireland. That means there's other Irish on that plane. Probably Irish men on that plane. And some tough Irish women that I've met in my life have come from Ireland. You're telling me you couldn't subdue the guy. Where's the duct tape? Remember when they were duct taping people to the seat? I would have duct taped him upside down in the seat. Okay? Number one. Number two. For that rampage, $20,000 is the fine he's going to face? Or is that the $20,000 for the mooning? Because that's $10,000 per cheek. I don't know how they're gonna schedule that out. I mean, how much? It should be 40, right? 20 apiece. But here's the thing I don't understand. How does the captain let him get up that close to him? That he puts his own hat on the captain's head. That's not acting like the captain. That's acting like Tennille. Okay. That was a generational joke for the older folks out there. You see, here's how it goes, Josh. There was the captain and Tennille. They were a band in the 1970s. Muskrat Love. You can look that up if you'd like. They were quite popular. But this to me is absurd. I mean, we've gotten to a place where one guy can hold the entire plane hostage. One guy. Nobody's got a wine bottle. Well, no, they don't serve alcohol on the planes anymore. That's probably why this guy was like going till. If I'm the captain, I'm getting on the radio when this dude is marching back and forth in the aisle, and I'm going, hang on, everybody, and I'm dropping about 4,000 feet. He will land on his naked cans and his naked butt, and we'll be able to handle the situation. But, I mean, to be held hostage for 8 hours, I'm really disappointed. I would expect either New Yorkers who are inbound to Kennedy or Irish folks coming out of Ireland to be strong enough to handle this guy. This guy, by the way, also apparently they've put up a picture of him. He's also, I guess, a semi-exotic dancer. He's got decent abs, and he's got okay guns, but that's still no match for 300 people on an airplane. I don't care what anybody says. So this is what passes for America today, and it's awfully sad as far as I'm concerned. All right, we are going to dive into something here coming up in this next hour. We're going to talk about what's going on in Ukraine, because Lord knows Joe Biden is ready for fighting against Vladimir Putin. And we're going to see how this is all going to play out. My hope and sincere hope is that this is just Putin show and bluster. I don't want to see your kids, my kids, anybody's kids sent over to have to go fight this fight. And it bothers me immensely that we are going to witness yet more brinksmanship and more puffery and more standing there like you're a tough guy and all that sort of stuff. For the purposes of what exactly? Ukraine has 44 million people in it. We're looking to move troops. We moved a ton of armament. We know Vladimir Putin is a bad guy, but we also know that Joe Biden, President Biden, has set certain limits that he's telegraphed already to Putin. He's already said there will not be American troops going into Ukraine. We do have National Guard troops there as trainers, though. He's come out and said we're putting 8,500 troops in Poland. And they're not going to go to Ukraine. Then why are you putting them in the neighborhood? What's the message to Vladimir Putin in that regard? So much of this is clearly connected to what it is that took place in Afghanistan and our open borders and our inability to secure our streets and our inability to get away from the defund the police narrative. In other words, Vladimir Putin's looking at the United States and he's betting that we're going to be like the 300 passengers on that flight. And that we're not going to get involved and stop this guy from rampaging up and down the aisles, insulting people and causing a problem. That's what he's betting on. He's looking at that plane filled with people and he's saying, it's impossible. They'll never stop the crazy Irishman who's running up and down with the butt cheeks hanging out. It'll never happen. And so what are you going to do? How do you fix this? We'll get some insights from Robert McGinnis. He's going to join us after the top of this hour. And we're going to have a long conversation about what the situation is now and what the peril is moving forward under this administration. 1 hour down, two to go. I'm Brett Winterbull, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Great to be here with you, as always. And one of the big stories that's out there moving, and our phone number 704-570-1110. One of the stories that everybody's paying very, very close attention to is what's going on with this standoff against Vladimir Putin over Ukraine. And somebody whose work I've greatly admired, and I want to welcome him to the program. We've not spoken before on this program, but I have a feeling it'll be the first of many visits, is Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis, who is joining us on the line now. He's retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel, graduated from the U.S. Military Academy, the Naval Postgraduate School, Command and General Staff College, the Defense Language School, and the Army War College's strategy course. He's an Airborne Ranger Infantry Officer with service in four infantry divisions on three continents, and he joins us now. Colonel, thank you so much for making time for us today, sir.
Well, thanks for having me, Brett.
As we look at the situation right now between the United States and Vladimir Putin, or NATO and Vladimir Putin, what is your biggest concern looking at the picture that's being laid out for the American people and the world?
Well, we are being drawn away from the most important existential threat posed against this country, and it's not Vladimir Putin and 100,000-plus soldiers on the eastern flank of Ukraine. It's Communist China on many fronts. That's why the Pentagon every year writes a updated report on the threats posed by the Communist Chinese. And so I expect that President Xi is sitting in his lawn chair there in Beijing getting ready for the Olympics, but also, you know, flipping channels and watching what Vladimir Putin is doing to the West by, you know, causing us to do loops and flips and so forth, you know, because he's threatening to invade eastern Ukraine.
One of the things that people keep pointing to, as if it's going to be some sort of a speed bump or a stoppage point, is the idea that the Olympics are coming up and Vladimir Putin wouldn't make any kind of a move in that regard. We remember distinctly in 2008, he did just that very thing. I don't think he's controlled by any sort of an external clock but his own intentions, just as the Chinese, as the CCP, are going to be driven by their own clock and their own intentions as well, right?
Yeah, there's no question. Of course, in 08, Putin took two provinces in Georgia, ostensibly gave them back. After the Sochi Olympics in 14, of course, he rolled into Crimea, annexed that, and lit up the 7.5-year insurgency that continues today in Donbas, which is the eastern part of Ukraine. You know, Putin has, as he said a year ago in the State of the Nation, every aspiration for, kind of reunifying, standing up the Russo-Ukrainian Empire again. You know, he has grandiose ideas about the resurrection of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And so the demands he gave to Lavrov to pass on to Biden a week ago in Geneva were essentially, you push back against NATO. I don't want NATO in the former Soviet satellites, nor do I want your weapons. Now, of course, supposedly we're hearing that Blinken sent a letter to the Kremlin answering their questions today. They didn't publicly release it, but I suspect they're saying, no, we're not going to move out of Eastern Europe. And, oh, by the way, you know, Ukraine is a sovereign country, has every right to join NATO if it meets all the criteria. So Putin, you know, and his oligarchs are not going to be happy. I suspect at the end of the day, they'll roll the dice and make a determination as to whether or not the U.S. and Biden are really serious about the threats. And they'll either roll the tanks west or they'll roll them home.
One of the things that is so irritating to me, and I'm sure to you and to so many people who watch these sorts of events so closely, is the multiple pivot points that we see take place between not just the Biden-Harris administration, but going back to the Obama-Biden administration. There was a time when we were ready to put a protective missile defense system in Poland. You had a decapitation strike against the people in the Polish government, and all of a sudden, Barack Obama said, no, we're not going to put those missiles in Poland, right? We're not going to stand strong to take on the threat that may be coming from Vladimir Putin. How much has Putin taken from our terrible pullout in Afghanistan and our inability to secure even our own streets in this country as a measure of weakness with President Biden?
No, I think Putin's a smart guy. You know, he, as a KGB officer, he understands how to play hardball. He understands the U.S. is weak, with a weak president who can't control crime, inflation, and his own southern border. So why in the world is he creating this flurry in the eastern part of Europe when, in fact, most Americans are tired of war from Iraq and Afghanistan and the like?
Right.
You know, what are our vested national interests involved here, frankly? They aren't members of NATO. I'm not sure we really have any. We don't like to see sovereign democracies crumble.
Right.
We don't like to see, you know, authoritarians take over, you know, innocent people and kill people. But at the same time, we've got to measure what's our best interest. Now, we've already sent, along with the UK, about $1 billion worth of javelins and other pieces of equipment, and there has been some movement into NATO nations of some additional troops. But, you know, going beyond that, I just hope we don't get into another situation, you know, like we had with Lyndon Baines Johnson and escalating in Vietnam, you know, believing in the domino theory, which was really a, you know, an empty theory that got us into trouble we shouldn't be in.
Lieutenant Colonel McGinnis is joining us here on the show. I'd like to hold you over into this next segment, if I could, because I'd like to take a deeper dive. You've got a book out, Give Me Liberty, Not Marxism. I'd love to get your thoughts on the sort of the woke approach that's taking place inside the military right now and how that may be affecting us in our ability to respond to threats like China. Can you stick around for just one more segment?
Sure.
Terrific. I'm Brent Winterbull, News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It is the Brent Winterbull Show. We are continuing our conversation with Colonel Robert McGinnis, who's kind enough to spend time with us talking about a number of the challenges that we're facing. He's a retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel, and he's a graduate of the U.S. Military Academy and the Naval Postgraduate School and the Command and Staff College. He's written a number of books. And the books that I think are really fascinating and very, very worthwhile checking out, especially over at Amazon or wherever it is that you get your books. It is a pleasure to continue our conversation. Colonel, we've seen a transformation take place in the military over the course of the first year of the Biden administration. It certainly saddens many people to see the objective of the military being spun from protecting the United States interests out there and honoring the Constitution to becoming sort of a social justice machine or a woke machine. You've got a book out now called Give Me Liberty, Not Marxism. Your thoughts on what you're seeing out there, Colonel?
Well, I'm very disturbed by what's happening, you know, within the ranks. Clearly, the Biden administration picked up where Barack Obama left off on, you know, women in direct ground combat. I'm not talking about women in the military. I'm talking about direct ground combat, which is something that, you know, almost got us into a draft for women with this Congress, thanks to Nancy Pelosi and her agenda. The whole transgender issue is significant. It's being pushed by the people on the E-ring, the appointees that Mr. Biden put in the Pentagon. And then, of course, we had the whole extremist vetting a year ago after Mr. Biden took office. And Lloyd Austin, Secretary of Defense, pushed that and made everybody go through training. You know, we don't have an extremist problem within the ranks, but yet after January the 6th, they wanted to make a point, and so they pushed that on the military and wasted a lot of time, in my estimation. And then, of course, the COVID vaccination issue. You know, we're losing incredibly talented pilots and others because of mandates, and yet, you know, they're not granting any, hardly any, religious exemptions or medical exemptions to people on active duty, which I find offensive. And then, of course, you saw what happened in Afghanistan. You know, just a total debacle, an embarrassment. And now Mr. Biden and his cadre of appointees are trying to, what I would argue is wag the dog in Ukraine, trying to distract from all his problems. So the military has been used for radical social agenda. I've been working this for decades, going back to the time of Bill Clinton when I was on the task force that wrote Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So I've seen it close in and not so close in, and I just find it appalling.
As part of the look back to the prior administration, President Trump's administration, we obviously heard the reporting that came out where General Milley was on the phone with his counterpart in the in the Chinese military, saying, "We're not going to go to war. We're not coming to get you. You know, we would let you know in advance." What sort of communication is going back and forth between, say, a General Milley or a Lloyd Austin and elements inside the Putin regime?
Well, they do talk, and that's something that you would expect here. The geographical combatant commander in Europe and Stuttgart to speak with counterparts in Western Russia and Belarus. You would expect that Lloyd Austin would talk to his counterpart in Moscow. You know, that sort of stuff is to really reduce tensions between nations. And I suspect that the conversations are ongoing now. We've done the same thing with the communist Chinese as well. But you have to be cautious about it. You have to be well prepared when you have those engagements. What General Milley did, giving a guarantee based upon what the media indicated he said, is not acceptable. He basically was acting as commander-in-chief, speaking to a foreign adversary, and clearly China's an adversary based upon their own declarations. You know, we need to be very cautious about having our senior people. He is the advisor, as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, to the President of the United States. He doesn't command anyone, to include probably his own secretary. But when he steps into that booth and does a video teleconference with the senior leader of a largest military in the world in China, he needs to be very cautious as to what he says and how he says it. And unfortunately, the media reports about what he did is not acceptable.
Your level of concern for what we're seeing over Taiwan obviously moves potentially against Hong Kong. Could we expect, if something does go badly in Ukraine, that the Chinese would take advantage of us not being able to handle a two-front fight?
Absolutely. You know, President Xi is very bright, very capable, and very hegemonic, has every intention of taking over Taiwan. By his own declarations over the last few years, that's his number one foreign agenda, his goal. And he makes it clear to the CCP, Chinese Communist Party, and all the Chinese people. So, yes, he'll take advantage of that, the ratchet up of flights by strategic bombers and jet fighters, submarines, even the couple of aircraft carriers, and the building of an amphibious force, all indicate that he's serious. And, of course, the Taiwanese take it seriously, too, as they've been, you know, buying left and right as many weapons as they can. And the Japanese, the Filipinos, the Vietnamese, all those in the area are on glass right now. They understand that things can go very bad, very quickly.
In our last minute or so, what's your level of concern that Iran might try a breakout move to take advantage in their sphere of influence as well?
Well, I kind of refer to what the Israelis are seeing. And the Mossad is very good at kind of picking up on the indicators. It does appear as if the Iranian mullah are enriching uranium at a rapid pace. Likely, they already have more than enough to make a number of bombs, like the North Koreans have probably in the neighborhood of 60 nuclear weapons. I suspect that You know, people in downtown Tehran have the plans they probably bought from the Pakistanis that are good about selling those sorts of things. And it's just a matter of putting the enriched uranium into some sort of package that could be delivered. Now, whether or not they could deliver that with a ballistic missile all the way to Israel, I think is something the Mossad is contemplating. But only a few years ago, if you'll recall, Netanyahu announced to the nation, showing them all the materials they took out of a warehouse, and it's really implicating. It's very serious. And so, yes, Iran is going to take advantage of our weaknesses.
Colonel Robert McGinnis, we so appreciate you coming on the program today. I'd love to have you back again, and I've very much enjoyed this conversation. I know the audience has as well.
Well, thank you, Brett.
All the best to you, sir. Thank you very much. I'm Brett Witterbull. That's Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Brett Witterbull Show. News Talk 1110, 993 WBT. You see this story about the man that was kicked off the transplant, the heart transplant list, because he's not vaccinated? Have you seen this? A Boston man has been thrown from the top of the heart transplant list with doctors saying it's because he refused to take the COVID vaccine and in their mind has less of a chance of survival. CBS Boston reporting, DJ Ferguson was on the waiting list to receive a heart at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, but has since been taken off the list. Ferguson's father told reporters the COVID vaccine is kind of against his basic principles. He doesn't believe in it. It's a policy they're enforcing. And so because he won't get the shot, they took him off of the list for a heart transplant. My son has gone to the edge of death to stick to his guns, and he's been pushed to the limit, Mr. Ferguson added. We are aggressively pursuing all options, but we're running out of time. I think my boy is fighting pretty damn courageously and has integrity and principles he really believes in that makes me respect him even more. It's his body. It's his choice, Mr. Ferguson asserted. And so now this man has been told no vax, no transplant. A hospital spokesperson, likely not a doctor, told the New York Post, "We do everything we can to ensure that a patient who receives a transplanted organ has the greatest chance of survival," adding, "Our Mass General Brigham healthcare system requires several CDC-recommended vaccines, including the COVID-19 vaccine, and lifestyle behaviors for transplant candidates to create both the best chance for a successful operation and to optimize the patient's survival after transplantation, given that their immune system is drastically suppressed." Patients are not active on the wait list without this. A GoFundMe campaign has been set up for Ferguson and has so far pulled in over $42,000. DJ's wife, Amanda, posted an update noting her husband went through all the testing to be put on the transplant list and passed with flying colors since he's young and healthy aside from heart failure. With that being said, he was accepted to be a candidate for the heart transplant. She continues, "The vaccine typically causes swelling in the heart, usually temporary. For most people, no big deal, right? But in DJ's case, he cannot afford for his heart to swell any more than it is already now. He's at an extreme risk of sudden death if it does. We have had many conversations with the doctors who confirmed that his heart could swell and go in a severe crisis, but they can't guarantee anything, and it's a choice we will have to make if he wants to be listed. We're devastated. We can't even process this." She continued, "I haven't even found the courage to sit down with my son and explain what's happening to his father." Their son, in this picture, you can tell is a very young boy. "I cannot even start to describe the pain we're going through." Isn't it interesting? Just by way of comparison, isn't it interesting that we have this story? So he's been taken off the transplant list because he's not complying with what they want. But I'm old enough to remember when Mickey Mantle received a liver transplant. And for those who remember Mickey Mantle, you understand what sort of behaviors Mickey Mantle liked to enjoy, meaning a lot of alcohol. He drank a ton, and that led to problems. And he got a liver transplant. So if he went through all that but got the COVID shot, he'd be okay to get a liver transplant, I guess, right? I guess they wouldn't take him off the list at Brigham and Women's. Well, last night I was stunned, fascinated, but not surprised in the least, at what Fox News' Brett Baer did when he reviewed the documents on special report about the cover-up of the origins of the COVID. That's right. Last night, based on evidence, Fauci was told on January 27th, 2020, that his beloved National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases had been indirectly funding the Wuhan Institute of Virology through a scientific nonprofit called EcoHealth, which was working on the novel coronavirus. Several days later, Dr. Christian Anderson, a virologist at the Scripps Lab, informed Fauci that COVID-19 appeared to be engineered and not natural. Anderson added that the situation needed to be looked at more closely, reported Fox News, at which point Fauci organized an all-hands-on-deck conference call with colleagues. Where he was told that risky experiments with the novel coronavirus may not have gone through proper biosafety review and oversight. Fauci quickly organized a conference call with dozens of virologists worldwide. Hello, everybody. It's me, Tony Fauci. Notes from the meeting obtained by special report revealed the suspicions of the lab leak theory were suppressed over concerns of how the public would react to news of possible Chinese government involvement. According to the report, a consensus was reached on the call to suppress the lab leak theory because it would add fuel to the conspiracists. Who cares what the conspiracists think? You know what consensus is? Consensus is climate change. Well, the consensus of the scientists say that we're going to be warming and we're cooling and the seas are getting higher, and it's a consensus of the people. What's a consensus? What if a consensus of the people got together and said, we're going to strip this group of people of their individual rights? We decided this based on a consensus. It's the weakest, lily-livered word that there is, consensus. But I digress. Let me go back. So they were worried about the conspiracists. It seems these documents show the virologists were more concerned about PR problems for China than being honest with the American public. As we know, virologists failed to stop the lab leak theory from gaining steam, but anyone who suggested the lab leak theory was a possibility was deemed to be a conspiracy theorist, including President Trump. Despite the evidence, there are still several officials that stand by the theory that the virus came from nature. They still say it. They still think it. But here's the thing. To use a cliche that's very popular right now, they got the receipts. Rand Paul's going to be able to ask a whole lot of specific questions to Tony the Fauci when he comes in front of him next time he's in front of that phony baloney committee. You watch. It's going to be good. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. Isn't it strange when you look at like the way Fauci has handled his business and the way the administration, not Trump himself, but the administration, the professionals that worked around him, the way they coddle the Chinese Communist Party and don't want to make Xi Jinping angry, don't want to do this, don't want to do that. They might do so. We've lost 800,000 people in our country and countless others who have been lost to things not directly connected to COVID, alcohol, drug overdoses, what have you, because they have become despondent as a result of this COVID catastrophe, the COVID calamity. Plus the millions worldwide who have died from this, and not a single leader in the world wants to stand up and say, we need a settlement conference. We need a meeting with the Chinese communists, and we're going to tell them that they owe the world $11 trillion for allowing this thing to get out. And that's the way it's got to be. And you know what? No one's got to fire a shot, and nobody's got to invade anybody. You just tell them, we're not going to buy your stuff in our country. We're not going to trade with you. Good luck. We'll shut you down. If you like what you're seeing in North Korea, you're going to love what the world's got planned for you, amigo. Why is nobody, like, demanding accountability? Okay, you know what, Xi? Here's what you do, Xi. Here's what you do. Show us the records that show that none of the stuff that we're talking about you had anything to do with. Show us some proof. Can't do it. Won't do it. It's absurd. And now you got a guy at a hospital who doesn't want to take the Fauci vaccine and is saying, forget it, I don't want to take it. And they're saying, well, you can't have a heart transplant, so we're just going to let you die. Death panels much, anybody? It's crazy. This is not who we are. Hello, Lorraine. Welcome to the program.
Hey, it's Mary.
Oh, Mary.
But anyway, yeah. Okay, so the whole thing with Mickey Mantle, here's the bottom line on this. Mickey Mantle actually had cancer in his liver, and he had cirrhosis, but he had cancer. And when it was very controversial at the time when they were going to do the transplant. He never should have gotten it. He died of cancer within 2 months, I believe it was, after transplant. So, you know, the criminal part of it is that somewhere down the line, someone decided that it was okay to be able to transplant him because he was Mickey Mantle.
Right.
And when you have immunosuppression drugs, that decreases your ability to be able to fight a lot of things. And that means that if you do have cancer cells in your body, it's going to replicate very quickly. In the situation with this young man who's waiting transplant, he should be able to, I mean, the fact that he's got a heart situation, and it's already been documented, medically documented. This is not something that's just misinformation.
Right. It's a kook. Crazy kooks. Yeah, right.
Yeah, this is something that's actually been documented. But when you're in a decreased state of being able to, health-wise, in this situation, where it's going to actually enlarge the heart, it will cause catastrophic heart failure. This is egregious beyond egregious that the medical community is saying he has to have a COVID shot. There are plenty of people that have had COVID shots with adverse reactions immediately. And someone that's in his situation where it is obvious that the heart is susceptible and that it is detrimental, there's no reason for them to have done this. I mean, it's one thing if somebody's a kidney transplant, they say you've got to do this for kidney transplant. I still find that to be the fact that you've got to subject yourself to something that is foreign to your body to be able to get a transplant. You know, there's one thing about saying it's prophylactic and you want to be able to do as much as you can to protect your immune system because you will be immunosuppressed. The medicine is that's what it does. It prevents your body from being able to reject an organ. But, you know, the fact that there is such a hypocrisy in this whole situation is beyond the pale.
You
and
know,
it makes me sick for this young man. It makes me just ill.
It's interesting that you raise that because I'm reminded by somebody else as we're talking of David Crosby. There was another controversial liver transplant. He had hepatitis C.
Well, that doesn't, I mean, hepatitis C, there's a lot of people that get transplants from hepatitis C. You can't, that to me should not even be a factor. That is one of the major causes of, trust me, I know because I dealt with transplants and my husband was a transplant, okay?
Yeah, I gotcha.
And my husband was transplanted because of hepatitis C. You can get hepatitis C not just because of bad behavior, say if you're a drug addict or something along that line, you do IV drugs. You can get it from a transfusion. It's a blood-to-blood way of being able to get the transmission of the disease. So you can't just throw the baby out with the bathwater. If David Crosby was a habitual drug user at the time of his, and he continued to do that at the time of his transplant, then he absolutely should have been rejected. If it was something that he had in his past and he had gone through and he's no longer part of his habit, there should be no question about it. So I'm sorry, but I do not agree with you when it comes to the hepatitis C issue because that's something if you don't know about transplants and hep C and everything else and how that's relating to it, that doesn't mean that he's a bad man, and no one that has.
Well, I wasn't saying he's a bad man for having hepatitis C. I was pointing out merely
it shouldn't prevent them from getting.
No, I get it, but I was pointing out here's another celebrity, right? He's a celebrity. Mantle's a celebrity. This guy's
certain amount of that. I mean, you know,
yeah, this Phil Collins paid for it for him. Phil Collins paid for it for him. I mean, that's like nice to have those kinds of resources when you're some schnook laying in a bed in Boston that nobody knows who you are, and they're saying you get out of your heart.
I know because I had to fight with the insurance.
No, I believe
to make this happen. I know.
Oh, I
believe. And I know what it's like here in this area. So, yeah. I mean, but the bottom line is that
I wasn't blowing up David Crosby for having Hep C.
Okay, well,
I was going for the
that way. I'm not trashing you. Just
I was going celebrity angle, not
okay,
Hep C.
Well, and that I understand. I think there's a lot of people. Jim Neighbors got a transplant. He didn't have
Gomer got a transplant. Another celebrity.
Who's that?
Gomer Pyle got a transplant. That's another celebrity.
Yeah, that's what I said, yes.
What are we doing? This is all celebrity.
So did J.R. Ewing.
Oh, my God, J.R. Ewing. I love that.
Yeah, you know, Shelley Fabre, she got a transplant.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
These are all famous people. These are all famous people.
So did the common people. A friend of mine has had her transplant.
Yes, ma'am.
And it was. She was very young. She had something that just happened very quickly. I think it was like atresia or something, biliary atresia. But she's had her transplant now for 30 years. And, you know, the fact is there are people that are out there that are just your everyday folks that are going to get a transplant, and they're great people. And and the fact is you shouldn't have something that's waving over your head. And that's the reason why I called. It should not really have something waving over your head that says you have to take a vax to be able to get it. That does not guarantee
the
result.
No, I agree. I think we've come to a good common understanding here, but I think we should also remember the record. 10 years after David Crosby got the transplant, he was sentenced to 5 years in prison because he had a hunting knife, a handgun, and an ounce of marijuana. See, this is a celebrity. He got the celebrity power there. He got away with a lot there. You know, I mean, that's it. But I'm happy he's alive. I want to see everybody be alive. That's it. And, great to talk to you. Please call me back again. It was a fascinating conversation, for real.
Thank you. Bye.
You got it. All right. That's good. See? I can dish it out, and I can take it. I can take it. Come here, I got to tell you a secret. I can dish it out, I can take it, but oftentimes I give it to Josh or TJ to take home. Like, I'll take it, I'll possess it, but then they end up, I give it to them. And then they take it out to the woods and dump it. They dump it out in the woods. That's what you got to do, man. I mean, that's it. I mean, I love that we went from Mickey Mantle to David Crosby to Jim Neighbors. I invoked Gomer Pyle, and then she comes back with J.R. Ewing. So we go name, character. That's transition. You're welcome, America. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. Brett Winterville Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Good to be here with you. Thrilled to be here with you, by all accounts. So guess what we got coming up in just a little bit. We got Bo Thompson coming by. We'll cross the streams. We got some thoughts on a couple of big stories that are out there moving. Nancy Pelosi is running again. If you were wondering about this, wonder no more. Nancy Pelosi has decided she loves Washington, D.C. so much. She's absolutely running again, and guess what else she's doing? She's having the Capitol Police surveil the people who meet with lawmakers, like a little kind of secret police force right there inside the government. And I've got a deeper dive into that coming up after the bottom of this hour. But a number of different things happening, a number of different things moving on this day. And we certainly want to get through a number of them. This is something that I thought was absolutely baffling. CNN had a guy come on their show last night. This is cut number 28. They had a guy come on the show, and his name is Scott Jennings. Scott Jennings was a George W. Bush advisor back in the day. And you know, he was an advisor, kind of a mild-mannered guy. So it's like 4-on-1 or 3-on-1 on the panel. It's Anderson Cooper, David Axelrod, somebody else, and Jennings. They were not ready for the laying of the wood on the administration that Scott Jennings brought in, because they were all like, oh, so what? Well, you know what? Maybe they should do some resets, and maybe things could be a little bit better, and maybe. He does a litany in 66 seconds that is pretty unbelievable. Cut number 28, go.
Scott, I read a piece that you just wrote essentially saying this is Joe Biden doing what Joe Biden does.
Yeah, well, I never imagined how quickly this would all unfold. The person they sold on the campaign, the nice old, you know, moderate grandpa who just wanted to help everybody get along and compromise, is not what we got over the last year. He has no mandate really to do much of anything. It's amazing that he got a couple of things done when the mandate was really pretty clear. 50-50 Senate, a near 50-50 House, and a pretty close presidential election. The mandate was simply replace Donald Trump and don't do anything drastic or stupid. And everything about this agenda is extremely drastic. And he's been angrier than I think people expected. He's been more divisive. He's been more partisan. You look at the issues. We built 5 years of coverage on Trump out of Russia, COVID, and democracy. The president at his press conference invites Russia to invade the Ukraine. We got more deaths under Biden than Trump. And now we have the president and vice president and leading Democrats question the legitimacy of the 2022 election. Are we any better off on these three issues that we crucified Trump over? I think he has a lot of political problems. And an AP poll came out this morning. Only 28% of Americans want the sitting president to run for re-election, and fewer than half of Democrats. This is a disaster.
It's a disaster. All right. I want to take a pivot on that point, and I want to go back to the story I was sharing with you in the last hour, what Brett Baer was able to put together on the Fox News channel. I couldn't play the package because it's like a 10-minute-long package, but essentially making the case that Tony Fauci and the higher-ups at the at his agency and the people who were around him knew full well of what was coming out of China. And that this gain of function thing and this coronavirus wasn't from a wet market. It was likely from a gain of function that had gone either badly or released on purpose. We don't know what the origin really is, right? I mean, we suspect strongly what it is, but we don't know. But we do know what the behavior was of the inner circle around Tony Fauci. They all hated Trump. Trump was bad orange man. They all hated Trump. Fauci hated Trump's guts. They all hated Trump. So let's go back in time to 2015. Donald Trump announces he wants to run for the presidency of the United States. People laugh him off. They think he's a clown. They think he's got no chance. He's a TV star. All of a sudden, he's saying things at speeches and events and debates. He starts to build traction and then eventually becomes the front runner. And everybody's saying, there's no way he's going to win. Hillary's going to clean his clock. He's going to get destroyed. Well, what we then found out was that all that time, while that was going on, Hillary Clinton's team, courtesy of people like Mark Elias and other outsiders as well, were working to take down whatever Republican nominee it was going to be, and it was going to end up being Donald Trump, and that led to the birth of the Russian dossier. And what did you have involved in the Russian dossier? What did you have in the Steele dossier? You had John Brennan. When's the last time you saw John Brennan on television anywhere? When's the last time you saw Jimmy clap on, clap off, Jimmy the clap clapper? When's the last time you saw him on TV? Where's Jimmy Comey? Where are Strzok and Page? Where are all those people that helped put together this thing that would ultimately be the weapon that was going to take Trump down, right? And it didn't. They weren't able to do it. It didn't work. It was a failure. Isn't it interesting? And isn't there an analog to be explored? Watch. This will be on Tucker Carlson's show because they listen to my show. What if COVID-19 in 2020, not the illness itself, but the failed response to tell the truth from the inside of that cabal of people, your Tony Fauci's, your Doris Burks's, Francis Collins and all of them. What if they were 2020's version of Strzok and Page and Comey and Brennan and Clapper, where they said, you know what? Let's try to save lives, but let's not make it easy on Trump. He'll probably make a mistake and we'll be rid of him. COVID could be our golden ticket. Could be our golden ticket to get rid of this administration. I'm not saying that that's what happened, but it's awfully suspicious that in 1 year you have massive circumstances of chicanery happening. You think the deep state would go away? I mean, I'm just asking. I'm not even saying it happened, but I'm just saying, what if Strzok and Page and Brennan and Comey were in 2020, Fauci and Collins and company? It was the same playbook, just a different passing scheme. Mo Thompson joins us next. We'll cross the streams. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It's the Brett Winterbull Show. It's that time of the day when we cross the streams in the PM with the AM, and that is Bo Thompson joining us now on the line. Hello, Bo Thompson. How are you?
Hump day, man. How's it going?
It's going well. Did you know that when we spoke this morning, what about like 8:35, Stephen Breyer, there was no question about Stephen Breyer remaining on the court, and now there's some question as to whether or not he's going to retire. Was he really ready to make that announcement today? How is this going to go? And now, of course, the mad scramble is now happening in Washington, D.C., as everybody begins to pivot and repivot to figure out what happens next with a Supreme Court justice.
I was watching some of the White House press briefing today, and there's Peter Ducey asking Jen Psaki about the possibility of Kamala Harris, the VP,
yep,
being nominated as a Supreme Court justice. There's no precedent for it, but it is possible. And I thought to myself, although it's unlikely, and they're certainly playing it down, but let's be honest, they're playing everything down. I mean, they the messaging right now is all over the place, which I'm sure you've touched on today. But it really is remarkable to see. It's almost like the lack of reaction or trying to scurry around to figure out who's going to be on the same page about this. But anyway, I was thinking to myself, so we talked so much leading up to President Biden being elected. You know, if he got elected, would he make it through his first term or a full term? And if he did not, you know, a lot of people said they thought that Harris would take over somewhere during the middle, right?
Right.
And now all of a sudden you're thinking of a scenario where she wouldn't make it through the first term for this reason or maybe other reasons. But I've just been thinking about that today, that question, just kind of imagining how that would all go down. What an unusual circumstance that would be. Like I said, albeit unlikely.
Okay, so here's what's crazy about this. Hypothetically, she gets put up for that nomination, and she goes through the nominating hearings and the questions and the answers and all that sort of stuff, right? And it comes time for a vote. So she's the vice president of the United States. Does she have to recuse herself from that vote? Could she put herself on the Supreme Court to break the tie, or does she have to recuse, or would she have to? How does this work exactly? Because who else breaks the tie if not her?
Right.
You can't. There is no such thing. So she'd have to theoretically resign.
Yeah.
And you'd have to appoint.
Now you're going down even further of a rabbit hole here.
And you'd have to appoint a new vice president into. Who'd have to be confirmed by the Congress.
Yeah.
Okay. Which would be that'd be easy, right? Because Pelosi still controls the Congress.
Things that political science classes are made of.
And if she goes down to defeat Bo Thompson, she's out on every level.
Again, it's like,
I mean, Vice President Newsom would have to break the tie. Vice President Newsom would break the tie.
It's like the multiverse.
It's a multiverse.
That's fascinating. I wasn't even thinking about that possibility.
So not only would Gavin Newsom become vice president, he'd get to pick her. He'd get to probably have a say of who's going to take over his job. I mean, who knows? We'll see. It's crazy.
It is.
My brain hurts. I feel badly, though. I feel badly for Breyer. I think he deserved better than this. And if this was the slip of a lip or a purposeful leak, how about that? Isn't that nice?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, and also this effectively ends the influence of President Bill Clinton. You know, this
oh, good point.
Of his mm-hmm. choices
well.
And... You know,
you're not thinking it. You're not thinking this through. You could have.
I've been.
You could have. You could have. You could have Supreme Court Justice Hillary Clinton.
True, that is true. I mean, but he said it was going to be an African American female, right?
Oh, that's a good point. Okay, Stacey Abrams.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm just going down the. And it's important to remember. We have to always do this reminder, Bo. We have to always do this reminder. You don't have to be a judge to be a Supreme Court justice.
Excellent point.
And you don't have to be in the Congress to be the Speaker of the House.
Deep thoughts.
Okay. Here's a deep thought. Here's a deep thought. This is a completely different subject. Totally different. This is Brett and Bo just talking like a couple of guys standing around, you know, a lemonade stand.
Right.
This is the 2-year anniversary of the passing of Kobe Bryant. Does it seem longer or shorter than 2 years?
Now, see, it seems shorter when I think about it today. However, I remember at the end of 2020, mm-hmm. you got to remember this was really the last big,
yep.
well, I take that back because you still had President Trump and the impeachment and
yeah.
the State of the Union. But other than outside of politics,
mm-hmm.
this was the last big story that happened before COVID took over.
That's right. That's absolutely correct.
So I remember thinking a year ago, and really at the end of 2020, where people kept saying, can we please just get to 2021?
Right.
This has been the worst year ever. I remember thinking that was pre-pandemic. So it almost seemed like it was a lot longer that first year. And now 2 years later, I feel like it's not as long. Is that weird?
No, not really. That's not entirely weird. Like I think back to his final game when he put up like 64 or something. It was that massive win on his very, very last game. That's the last like big vibrant memory of him that I have. And that was obviously back in 2019 or 18 or whatever it was. But that day was terribly shocking. And it's a reminder to us though that we. I get people hate Tom Brady, right, because he keeps playing, and Aaron Rodgers is annoying or whatever. But we have to acknowledge the greatness in our midst when we watch great players because we don't know when they're off the stage completely.
Well, he's one of those players, and he played so much like Michael Jordan. I mean, he mimicked Jordan, even
right.
down to the faces he made during interviews. That was the thing about Kobe that I thought was so remarkable is he wanted to be like Jordan, but he really was the closest thing I think we have seen or ever will see to Michael Jordan.
Yep.
And my son has really gotten into that series that debuted during the pandemic, the Jordan, you know, The Last Dance.
Yes.
And I think part of it's the way that whole series was produced, but I went out, walked through the den the other day, and there he is just watching it. You know, it's 10 parts, so it's kind of one of those things. When he's bored, he throws it on, and I'm thinking, he's watching a guy whose heyday was in the 90s, and you don't have a lot of athletes like that. And I think Kobe falls into that category, mainly because he was sort of an extension of Michael. But you're exactly right. It's Jordan, it's Kobe, it's Tom Brady. I mean, I remember watching Jordan, and I know you do too, and I remember thinking to myself, not always going to be like this.
That's right.
There were elements of Kobe like that, too.
13th pick of the 96 draft, and where'd he go, Bo?
The Charlotte Hornets.
Mm-hmm. The big circle. It's the big circle, man.
Yeah, what could have been.
Yeah, yeah, without a doubt.
But he knew he was never going to play here.
Yeah.
So we got Vlade Divac.
Hey, nothing wrong with Vlad.
Yeah, I remember one time, I'll leave you with this. I remember I used to be a producer back in the day for the station, and I did all the imaging, and I sent the voice guy, the big booming voice guy, a promo that said, Vlade Divac scores on WBT, and we got it back, and the guy says, Vlad Divac scores on WBT.
Very nice.
I have it.
Quickly, what do you got coming up tomorrow?
We have Brett Jensen in the House, big Thursday morning, and as always on Thursdays, David Chadwick as well, and Bill Graham, our legal analyst. I can't imagine a better day to be talking to Bill Graham with all this Justice Breyer breaking news today and what happens next with the Supreme Court. So tomorrow morning, bright and early, starting at 5 a.m., we'll have the latest, of course, also on Russia and Ukraine. Lots of stuff going on.
Appointment listening. Have a great night, buddy. I appreciate you, man.
Talk to you tomorrow.
You got it. That's Bo Thompson. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It's the Brett Winterville Show. 704-570-1110. We'll take your calls all the way to the end of the hour. It'll be Tar Heels basketball coming up at 6. Let me jump out and talk to, James. Hello, James. Are you on the line?
Yes, that is the proper name on my birth certificate.
Oh, it's Jim. How are you, Jim? What's going on?
Have you been checking my record?
You mean like your arrest record? Which records? What records are we talking about? Penal code?
That's where an arrest record would start, isn't it? At birth.
Oh, gosh. All right, Jim. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
I have to commend whoever the genius programmer was on Monday that decided we should go with a best of show, because that way Jim of San Diego can be on more than once during a show. That was brilliant.
Were you on twice?
At least that I could count. Yeah.
That's great. I knew they would do that. That's outstanding. So it was multi-Jim.
I'm part of the best of.
But,
isn't that amazing?
Well, here's the thing. I can almost guarantee that you have been part of best ofs in the past as well. I mean, you have consistently brought takes and opinions and analysis, and so we include that, you know, regularly.
Yeah, I'm just now skip tracing back and going through the podcast and listening to best ofs to see, hey, I might be out on this. I might be in there somewhere.
That's right.
But before, I was just calling in because it's my patriotic duty, my friend.
Well, listen, let me say something here. I announced this earlier, last week I announced this, but I'm going to announce it again now. So the 17th of February is my two-year anniversary, and I've agreed, a two-year anniversary being here on WBT. So I've agreed, since Joe Biden did a press conference, I am going to do a press conference that day and take questions about the show and about me or whatever from the listeners. Who would actually at that point become callers. So I want to be like Joe Biden. Now, remember, I have a three-hour show, so I could exceed Biden's two-hour record of babbling nonsense, but I have 3 hours that I can use. So, you know, we'll just see how long I can stand there at the podium and answer the questions.
Wow, I wonder how many pejoratives are going to come out of that press conference with a microphone.
No, they're having a meeting that day. The pejoratives are having a meeting that day. That's why they're not going to be at they won't be at the press conference.
That's going to be so much fun. But the reason I called in is Papa John Phillips. Remember?
Sure.
He got a liver transplant?
Yes, sir. He did.
Yeah, and he was a drinker.
Yes.
And because he was privileged, he got on the list first, and then they found him at the bar. They ambushed him in the bar, coming out of the bar.
No. Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, you didn't. You didn't see this?
I didn't. So he got the transplant and he went back to drinking?
Yeah.
That's so sad.
Everybody knew that he was drinking, and somebody was upset about it. So they gave him up. And, you know, one of these nightly ambush interview things, I don't remember who it was, John Quinones or...
Wow, throwback name from Jim. Yeah, throwback name from Jim, yes.
Yeah, the other one, but I don't remember who it was, but they... He came wandering out to his family van, and they're sitting there in the van with camera on. And go, hey, what are you doing?
Oh, that's terrible. I would think I would remember that, but I don't remember that. But that's a terrible. That's very sad. That's a horrible story.
Yeah. But there's an example of people of privilege abuse their the process if you give them a transplant. And so, you have to be guarded about
I don't want to speak Greek here, but let me just give in parentheses to the audience. The reason why we're talking about this is there's a story out of Boston, Massachusetts, where a man is waiting to get a heart transplant. He's got a young son. He's a married man. He's taken good care of himself, very good care of himself, but his heart is failing, and he refuses to take the COVID vaccine, and as a consequence, Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, a very, very elite hospital, has taken him off the heart transplant list because they're saying you have to take the vaccine to get the transplant. And he's saying, I'm worried about the impact on my new heart if you guys make me do that, and I'm not comfortable doing it. And he's literally going to potentially sit and wait for someone to come through with a heart, or he's going to lose his life. And it's a very sad story. That's what prompted that.
You're right. But the Hippocratic Oath is everything. The Hippocratic Oath is even before the democratic process that we uphold. It even goes back to the ancient Greeks. The Hippocratic Oath is the one thing that should be preserved. And with anybody picks and chooses and decides this person can get treatment and this one can't, it's wrong. Mm-hmm. And it's what they're all about is trying to take every institution and every process and protocol that we know of and trying to turn it upside down.
Right.
Which leads me to the case of Judge Breyer.
Yes, sir.
Can I?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so they always do this. The woke especially, the Democrats traditionally, they don't wait for history to overtake you to see what your imprint is going to be on your administration, your time in power. They always try to go out and tinker with it and manipulate it. George Bush, okay, he had programs, No Child Left Behind, that he was going to do. And what did his imprint on history become? It became something that he couldn't control. We were ready for it, thankfully. But to a certain extent, we were, you know, when we fought back, we had all the tools in the box to fight back with. But what they do is always try to, they're trying to edge Judge Breyer out, mm-hmm. because they want to install somebody. And I think Bo's right. I think they want to try to make an imprint on history like Obama. Just because he was black, they wanted to make history.
Well, but
they just wanted to make history, regardless of his credentials.
See, but here's the thing I would say about that, and I do disagree in this regard. You're going to have a confirmation hearings. A person who's qualified is qualified. A person who's not qualified is not qualified. And what I think is shameful about the whole process is to say, okay, we're not going to focus on the full person. So if it's an African American woman, if it's an African American male, if it's a Hispanic American woman, Hispanic American male, whatever the person is, they're more than just their race and their ethnicity and their gender. They're an individual person who ought to be respected. And I think it's very disrespectful, not from you. And unfortunately, I got to wrap this up because I got to do a traffic update. But what the shame of this is we're going to boil somebody down to just their parts and not who they are as a person. And I think that's a shame. We want to make history. Just pick great people. Pick great people and celebrate achievement. I think it's... To me, I'm in favor of diversity. I'm in favor of people competing and succeeding and doing well. But I just the idea that we're going to define it all down to just your how you look or who you are. I think there's got to be more to that as a person. And I think anybody who's going to be elevated to that position deserves that kind of celebration and consideration as well. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. It's the Brett Winterbull Show, 704-570-1110. It is good to be here with you. Let's take a couple calls out on the phones here. Let's talk to Jack first up. Hey, Jack, welcome to the show.
Hey, Brett, how you doing, buddy?
I'm well. Thanks for calling in today.
Hey, just real quick, I won't take too much of your time, but your comments regarding hiring the right person, I mean the best person for the job,
yes,
just brought back a memory of a story that my dad told me a few times. He's passed away now. But he told me about going to the Rock Hill finishing company called the Bleachery in Rock Hill, and applying for a particular job. Mm-hmm. And he says the guy, the hiring manager, looks at his application, reads him, asks him a few questions, and then says, I know you can do the job. He said, but unfortunately, we don't hire colored people to do that kind of work. Mm-hmm. And my thing is that, unfortunately, that perception of that personal, I guess, hiring agenda mm-hmm. still exists for a lot of people, man.
Sure.
So if we... if we didn't have diversity goals and things like that, a lot of times blacks and mm-hmm. other minorities wouldn't get hired.
Right. Well, sure. And look, the reality is we have done a very good job. If you look at the bench downstream from the Supreme Court, right, you have seen a lot of diverse people appointed through a series of different presidencies, right? I mean, we've got people on the bench who have been on the bench since Reagan. So we've got a lot of people.
But over time in his whole history of this country, mm-hmm. we've had two blacks on the Supreme Court,
right.
And we only have one Hispanic, and all that happened in recent history.
Right. Well, right. I take that as progress, right? That we're making progress because these seats don't come up every year, unfortunately, or every 2 years, right? They come up when they come up. And, you know, I think the average time for someone to sit on the court is like 10, 12 years. I mean, it's a very lengthy period of time.
I don't know the numbers, Brett, but I'm sure since the 60s, since the Civil Rights Act was passed, mm-hmm. I'm sure we probably had, what, maybe 15 to 20? Maybe more justices
over that period of time. That sounds right. Yeah.
And again, we've only put, there's only been two blacks, Thurgood Marshall mm-hmm. and Clarence Thomas.
Right.
And you know there are many more who are qualified.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But like I said, you have different agendas there in the White House, right? So if Joe Biden says this person's going to get the slot, okay, so that person's going to get the slot, but then who is that person? Like, what is that person's background? What is their story? I want to know more about the person. I have no power to put anybody on the court, right? I'm a guy on the radio, but I want to know more about them. I want to know the three dimension of them, of who they are, what they believe, how they view what we have as our Constitution, and all those things. That's all I'm asking for. I'm just asking for more. In terms of hearing that conversation, I think the American people deserve that. Whether they're
I agree with you on that too, man.
Which is what I'm saying.
We live in a great country. There are hundreds and maybe thousands of people who are qualified to do that job. They're just not a minute few. There are a lot of people who are capable of being a great Supreme Court judge.
Sure, absolutely. There are great people on the bench. There are people in jurisprudence that all have that skill set, and that's what it's about. I want to know, okay, how do you view the role of a Supreme Court justice? I just want to know those kinds of answers. If it's somebody who says, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that, and they'll never tell you how they're going to rule on a case, and I really don't care about ruling on a case, right, because that's going to be worked out in the court. But I just want to know how they think.
Final question. All things being equal, however, if you had a minority and you had a majority race person, all things being equal, they both stack up pretty much the same, what would you do?
I give it to the minority.
Okay, good. Thank you.
No, there you go, man. I mean, it's interesting to me that's what you boil it down to also.
Yeah, sure, exactly. That's what I would do.
Right, because you have a vet, you have an interest. It's like it's kind of how you view it. What I'm saying is, I want to know about the people that we're electing. Do you understand? This is not just about a Supreme Court job, Jack. This is about
No, you don't.
You see, your last question told me a lot about the way you view this. I want to know about the people that are elected. And I want to know about the people on the Supreme Court. And I want to know about the people in the Congress and in the Senate and in the State Assembly. I want to know about these people. And what I want to know about these people is, how do you think? What do you think America is? And what do you think America ought to be? And it's the question between what do you think America is and what America ought to be. That's where you find out the truth of who the person is.
I agree with you, Brett, on that. But unfortunately, our political system is a popularity contest.
No. It's a popularity. Fine. But don't you want to know about the people?
Absolutely.
So do you dig into them? Do you try to find out about them? I mean, tell me, if it's a black person, a white person, a Hispanic person, an Asian person, what's the most important quality for you?
Most important quality is, well, I'm a constitutionalist. I like you follow the Constitution. I think we've got a great document.
Right.
It needs to be tweaked tweaked sometimes, but I want to.
But what's the most important criteria? What's the most important criteria?
It's fairness. It's fairness. Being fair and equal as much as possible.
I would say being fair and equal, but I would also think following the Constitution is the most important thing.
Yeah, I mean that. But unfortunately, our law leaves room for discretion.
It does,
and that's what gets us. You know.
So I want somebody who's going to use good discretion.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, that's there. You go. I mean, that's. I don't know. You know, Jack. Great conversation. I just don't know what else I can give you there. I mean, I'm just kind of telling you where I stand on this. The Constitution was written on purpose, and it's so brilliant for one big reason that people don't ever realize. The founders, as much as people hate the founders are the devil. They're the worst human beings ever to walk the face of the earth. Right. I mean, we hear that all the time. They left you. 260 years later, they left you, they left me a mechanism by which we can amend and fix it in real time. Tell me that's not genius. The vast majority of elections that are held in this world are one man, one vote, one time. We've done a pretty good job of maintaining the republic. That's going to do it for me. We've got Tar Heels basketball coming up next. I'm Brett Witterbull, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT.